Radio, the transmission and reception of electromagnetic waves on radio frequency, especially those carrying sound messages, or the activity or industry of broadcasting sound programs to the public. Fanboy, a male fan, especially one who behaves in an obsessive or overexcited way.
This is the Radio Fanboy Podcast, and here's your host, Bevo.
We're heading back into the news department this time, and right now we're catching up with a lady who has quite an unusual name. It's quite memorable. You may have heard her on Melbourne radio. You might have heard her on Sydney radio, and even back in the 90s, you might have heard her on community radio in Caboolture. Let's welcome Hope Vavilia. How are you going, Hope?
Hi, Bevo. I'm well. How are you?
Good. We're just having a little joke off before, and I was saying, oh, the first time I heard your name, I thought you said, I hope I'm familiar. But no, it's not that. It's Hope Vavilia.
I've had all sorts. Someone said it sounds like a flower. Gravilia, Fabilia.
What is your origin?
I am Filipino, part Spanish, part Chinese, but I wasn't born here. But people mistakenly think I was because of the way I speak. But yes, I came from the Philippines.
And you have recently submitted a story to SBS for a short stories competition, and you've got such an incredible story. I had a friend of mine, Phil Brandel, who was my program director in Sydney many years ago, and he rang me and said, oh, Hopefully, it should be great to have on your podcast. And I went, yeah, oh, I know. I know Hope. For many years ago, we started in community radio together.
We did. We did. That was a long time ago.
And the story that he was telling me was your mixed background, and you had to you came here quite young. You tell the story. I'm terrible at telling stories.
Oh, look, but how much do you want to know? Because it's just, I don't want to bore people either.
So. Well, let's put it in a nutshell then, what you wrote about in this short story for the SBS contest.
In a nutshell, I came here, I couldn't speak the language, I was petrified, but my mother, who spoke fluently, would send me off on errands to buy things for her. Back then you could, and you weren't afraid of your child getting snatched or anything. It was just walking. Oh, to be fair, everything was close by, so people knew who I was. We were in these rows of shops because she had a gift shop. So she would send me to the takeaway store. So picture a 70s takeaway store with the Bain Marie and the greasy Cabanas and the Chico rolls, and she would send me there. She would order something I never knew how to pronounce. And that would just be one errand. Or she'd make me get groceries, just little things, you know, a few things in the supermarket. And then I'd come back. She said, oh, that was the wrong item. You need to return it. So this is me at seven and eight having to go to a supermarket. Imagine trying to front the checkout person going, excuse me, but I've got the wrong item. So it was so terrifying, not speaking the language, well, not being able to say many things in English. And I'm having to return a product that was incorrect. Good luck. It would be like asking you in China, now Lee brought the wrong item home, go back to the store in China, speak in Mandarin, good luck.
Yes. So you grew up in Western Sydney, is that right?
I went to school in Bellevue Hill. Bellevue Hill, and I didn't speak English. And at the time, the kids were so mean. And I remember one kid, I was lining up for the slippery slide, and he said to me, made a fist, and he said, Ching Chong, if you don't let me go ahead, I'm going to punch your face in. This is a boy talking to a girl.
Yeah.
And I was so scared. I let him go ahead on the slippery slide. What are you going to say when you don't speak the language?
Well, it sounds like you had to learn very quickly. You didn't have much choice, did you?
No, not at all.
Let's swing across to the radio side of things. You got your start on community radio in Caboolture and met yours truly.
I got my start there, but that was accidental. Do we call it an accident? A friend of mine, it was the only station, community station in Australia with a paid full-time journalist. And she said to me, at the time it was rare because I think it was part of the conditions of, you know, whatever it was for them to be on air. And she said to me, I have to get my tonsils out. Can you fill in? You'll get paid. And I said, oh, yeah, sure. But I didn't do radio at uni. I majored in print, and I'm hoping to get into print and work for a newspaper or magazine. She said, yeah, it'll only be 2 weeks. So I fill in for 2 weeks. She's getting her tonsils out, recovering. And someone
What was her name again? I'm trying to remember her name.
It was Jenny Rogan.
That's it. Rogan, yes.
All these names, blasts from the past.
Oh, yeah. Carry on.
Yeah, so she was recovering from tonsillitis, and someone from a station in Noosa, I think it was 4GY, He heard me read the news one day. He phoned the station, 4OUR, and said, "Are you working alone?" And I said, "Yeah." I told him the story. I'm filling in this and that. And he asked me if I could send him an air check. And I said, "Why?" And I said, "Sure, I'm not sure why you want an air check." He said, "Oh, just, you know, am I okay to hand it out to people?" And I said, "What do you mean hand it out?" He said, "Oh, there's just several stations that might like you." And I said, "Okay." I didn't think anything of it. So I sent him an air check, and then we started work helping each other out. He was doing voice reports for me, because if you remember community radio, you're just on your own. So yeah, you're basically a one-person band. So I'm trying to string news together for a station. I don't have access to AAP, so I'm trying to find local news, and then on top of that get audio for the news. So we helped each other out. So then I think within 2 weeks the phone started ringing. I had phone calls from Emerald, I had phone calls from commercial stations in Brisbane. They all wanted me to work for them.
Oh,
I thought,
wow.
What is I didn't understand. Triple M called me, 4BH, and I thought, why are these people calling me?
Yeah.
So I ended up landing my first commercial job at 4BC. I was a junior burger, and I didn't know this, Lee, but the station at Macrossan Street in Brisbane, which no longer exists because they've built a high-rise apartment there, it was haunted. Did you know that?
Oh, no, I did not know this.
It was haunted, and I didn't know that either at the time, and I was doing overnights for 1 year, and I can recall the sports booth, the TV going on at 1 a.m, but I didn't think anything of it. I thought, oh, the TV's gone on. I went in there and switched it off.
And then you came back and it was on again. It was like, doo 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 doo.
Well, yeah, but I never thought anything of it. Okay. So, yeah, years go by and somebody said to me, oh, that place was haunted. I said, oh, that's why the TV came on at 1 a.m. I would have freaked out if I'd known that. I wouldn't have gone back to do my shift.
Why would they turn the TV on at that time anyway? It's only infomercials.
I know, exactly.
So from 4BC, the journey carried on?
Yeah, I only stayed there for a year, and then I ended up, you know, moving on and southward to Sydney, and I was casualing for 2GB at the time, and then someone there said, oh, look, my fiance works at 2UE. They've got positions going there, and you might want to give them a call. So I was just moonlighting at 2GB for a bit, and then I called up the news director, Murray Olds, who's a lovely person, and he's, you know, I don't know if you've met Murray, but every second word, he's like a wharfie.
Oh, is he?
Every second word, you'd have to beep if you had to interview him.
Was he wearing like a beanie or something like that?
No. He's the loveliest man in radio, one of the loveliest people and bosses you could ever work for. So I ended up going to see him, and they're on the Pacific Highway in Gore Hill. And so it was the old station, not the one that's a few doors down from where they are now. And so he's come in. He had heard of me because, you know, 4BC was connected to 2GB, so my reports were going to 2GB in the middle of the night. And he said to me, oh, well, he had the show reel. He said, can you just read some news here? He just grabbed a bunch of, you know, old news that was read, because back then it was all on paper, remember? So he just grabbed a clump of news and said, oh, here you go. Just go and read this in the booth and I'll be back in 5 minutes. So I've recorded on the reel to reel. And then I've come out and said, yep, all done. So he's had a listen. And then, all these words just came out. I can't even say on your podcast.
Well, you can, because it's a podcast.
Oh,
I just have to click the little box that says explicit content.
But if you can just imagine every second word, he just said, what are you doing out of beep work? And he couldn't believe it. So then he dragged me downstairs to where the Sky News Network the head of Sky News Network, Hugh Drury, was sitting. And Hugh was busy. I could tell by his body language. It's like, oh, what does he want? What does Murray want? What does Buzzard want? And he said, you've got to listen to this woman read. So it went from there, and then the next day I started working for them. There was nothing going at the time, even though someone at 2GB had said, yeah, they've got positions going. But he said, oh, there's nothing going, but you can start work. So I'm getting these funny looks from everyone, because it's like, who, you know, how did she just come in and start working? There's nothing going here.
Oh, jeez. That's incredible. Yeah. They created a role for you by the sounds of it.
Yeah. So I was reading the national news for the Sky News Network. That went to about 78 stations around the country.
Oh my God.
Tasmania, Darwin, all the stations that couldn't afford a newsroom that had to buy the news service. So I was there for 4 years. I was in these newsrooms. You could hear me in these newsrooms for 4 years going. And I remember my parents saying to me, oh, we went up to Darwin and people knew who you were. I said, what? Because they check into the hotel and then, you know, I've got my mum's last name, not my late dad's. And So they said, oh, your daughter reads the news for Sun FM. So it's like, wow, okay. Just the power of radio, it goes to so many places you don't realise.
No, and yeah, with a name like Hope Fabilia, you know, it's going to stick in people's minds, isn't it?
That's it. I think I could safely say I'm the only one with this name. I have met a few Hopes, which I'm not happy about.
Yeah, no.
Because I thought, you know.
Bit of a Hope
I thought
rivalry.
I thought Obi-Wan Kenobi. That was the, if you're a Star Wars fan, I always say, I'm the Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Oh.
You know where she says, help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're my only hope.
I'm
the Obi-Wan Kenobi of that name. And so when I meet people, it's like, you can't be Hope. I'm the only Hope.
No, that's right. So you spent quite a few years in the Sky newsroom, by the sounds of it. You moved on from there?
I did. And then I jumped onto the dark side of things. When I say the dark side, the journalists always joke. So I went into public relations.
Ooh.
It was the first time. Yes. And I'd gone for this job with New South Wales Lotteries. But the funny thing is that job still required being on radio, which is probably why I landed in the first place.
Okay.
Because I needed to do the lottery results for regional stations in New South Wales.
Oh, yeah.
So the first day I started, somebody at, I don't know where it was, Mudgee or it was one of the regional stations, they said to me, oh, it's 2UE done a deal with lotteries. And I said, what do you mean? They said, oh, you're doing the lottery results for the radio stations. I said, no, totally separate. But they just connected me with 2UE because I'm still doing results for the lotteries on radio. But I said, no, nothing to do with radio.
Oh my goodness.
So I'd be calling up, I was calling up Powerball winners, Lotto winners, and most of the time people thought it was a joke because I'd call up and I'd say, oh, hi, this is Hope calling from lotteries. And I wouldn't tell them they won straight away. And then I'd string them along and say, did you buy an Oz Lotto ticket last night? And you'd go, yes. And
if it's the winning one, I did.
Yeah, because I'd be calling registered players. And then they'd say, is there something wrong? And I'd say, oh, no, I'm just checking your details are all correct. And it's just a standard procedure. And then I'd say to them, what numbers did you have? Even though it was right in front of me.
Yeah.
And they'd tell me, and then I'd say, yeah, that's what I've got. And then I'd say, you're sitting down, you've won $20 million. Then they'd think it was a joke because they'd say, who put you up to this? Because your name's Hope and you're working for lotteries.
Yep.
So I used to get that all the time. But that was good. But then it became like being the bridesmaid and never the bride because I was telling people they won all this money. We couldn't accept any part of the cash that they won. I know.
Would have been a very lucrative job otherwise.
I know.
Oh, she was lovely, that Hope. I'm going to give her $10 million.
No, $10 more like it, $10 and no more. Otherwise, we'd be in trouble. So it was an ethical thing that we had to sign. And so, but it was fun, but it became, like I said, being the bridesmaid and never the bride. And but I made a lot of people happy. So bearer of good news for once. Yeah.
Oh, there you go. The bearer of good news. That's another thing to stick on your resume.
So then from there, I moved on to radio. I moved on to Melbourne, and that's where I landed a job at Fox and Triple M.
Oh, cool.
So I was there for a bit. Yeah. So I've done the AM and FM circuits, and I can safely say I've worked for both and can read both styles.
I remember our paths crossed again when you were in Melbourne, when you went across to ARN. I think you were doing Mix 101.1 and doing a bit with Simon Diaz as well.
Yes, I was working for Gold and Mix, so I was doing two stations, which is the normal thing these days when you have to anchor both stations. So, yes, I was on there with Simon Diaz, another lovely person in the radio industry. And, of course, all these people on Gold, it was Grubby and Didi and Huggy and John Peters, all these names that everyone knows about in radio.
Had you heard of these people before you'd gotten to Melbourne?
Well, no, because I wasn't in Melbourne, but I had heard of, I worked with Barry Bissell. He's another lovely person in radio. I worked with him at Fox, but
never heard of the guy. No idea.
The Gold personalities I hadn't heard of, but, just a really good bunch of people to work with. No tantrums, no diva-like behavior. They were just a nice bunch of people who were well-known, but didn't let it get to their heads.
We're going to have to jump back to Barry because everyone in radio asks, what's Barry Bissell like?
Oh, my goodness, Barry, where do I start? He knows his material. He's just a smooth operator. He's fantastic. I have nothing, no bad words to say about Barry. He just knows his craft, and I can understand why he's made it to where he's made it. He's a terrific guy.
So you called Melbourne home for a few years.
I loved Melbourne. Of all the cities, the major cities I've lived in, I loved Melbourne. It was just, I made more friends there than I did in a month in Sydney. The people are just different. But yeah, I had to leave Melbourne. So after 6 years there, Canberra came calling. Because of my background, the child support agency wanted to, well, they don't exist anymore. They're now under the Department of Human Services, but they were starting a media department. They never had one, so they had such a bad reputation, you know, about separated parents and separated families, and they badly needed to get their reputation fixed because they just didn't, or they just had a negative perception with the general public. So they were starting a team of eight, and they asked me to be an assistant media director for the media team. So that was a challenge because you'd have a current affair calling about a deadbeat dad. We can't, you know, it was under the Privacy Act. We couldn't reveal anything about anyone, no matter how bad or how good. We just couldn't. So I imagine having your hands tied and then having a current affair journalist call you saying, yeah, we've got this information about this mum or this dad. It's like, oh, I can't tell you anything.
Yeah, gee.
That was a challenge.
That would have been hounding too. Like, they'd turn up on your doorstep and say, hey, come on, let's talk about this.
Yes, it was rather tricky. I said, look, I can't confirm or deny anything that you were saying. So it was like working for a secret agency saying, sorry, can't say anything. So I stayed there for 13 months. And then radio, it's just like a vortex, as you know, Lee. It keeps on sucking you back in. Good old Glenn Daniel. Everyone knows Glenn.
Oh, so, Glenn. He's like your dad. He's so warm and loving.
He's like a dad or uncle that you love. Not the embarrassing one, but the dad or uncle that you love. And, you know, he said, oh, what are you doing? And at the time, I just got married. And I was a lady of leisure. So I said the truth. I said, I'm doing an InStyle magazine survey. And there was just silence at the other end. He thought I was kidding. And he said, no, for work. And I said, I'm doing a survey for InStyle magazine. Yeah. And so then he said, oh, do you want to come back to radio? I said, no, because I'd retired. See, after Melbourne, I thought, this is it. I sounded like John Farnham. This is it. This is the last time.
This is That's the voice, try and understand it, make it clear.
I said this to everyone, this is it, this is the last time. And then Glenn Daniel made me into John Farnham.
Yeah.
So it took two phone calls and I ended up going back into radio. But we'd never worked in the same city. I worked for him when I was at ARN in Melbourne. He was my boss. He was based in Sydney. So then I said, oh, we'll finally be based in the same newsroom. Only we never saw each other because he had the breakfast shift and I had the afternoon shift.
Oh, right, okay.
Same city, but your same newsroom, but we just passed each other like ships in the night. So it was very funny. So then I, you know, I was only supposed to be there for 3 months and I ended up being there for a decade.
Oh, my Lord. That's incredible.
I know. So that was the last time. That was really the last time. I retired March last year.
Yeah.
And now I'm completely out of radio.
Sure you are. You're about to go on a podcast talking about radio. All these radio ears will be listening going, I remember her. I've got to get going. I'm going to give her a call right now.
The answer is no. Thank you, but no.
But that's what you said the first time to Glenn. So, you know, it just takes two phone calls.
Yeah, but he had carrots to dangle in front of me and the carrots were too fat and juicy to say no to.
Hope Pavilia, thanks so much for joining us on the Radio Fanboy podcast. So good to catch up with you after all these years.
Yeah, likewise, Devon. Thank you.
The Radio Fanboy Podcast, hosted by Bevo and produced by Matt Fulton Productions. Dan Hill speaking.